Before we even call up the cases, you'll notice we've got Justice Gibbons in for retired Justice Silver, and we've got Justice Herndon down there who's going to be participating remotely as well. So, with that, let's call up the first case. This is docket number 83422, Washoe County Human Services versus District Court. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you. And may it please the court, Erin Morgan, on behalf of Petitioner, Washoe County Human Services Agency. NRS 432B.393(3)C is constitutional. It is well established that statutes are presumptively valid, and the juvenile court plainly disregarded this precedent. The constitutional validity of this statute cannot be overcome for several reasons. Most notably, 3C does not infringe on a fundamental right. A finding pursuant to this statute is not a final order depriving a parent of the care, custody, or control of their child. Before 3C can even be considered, the temporary intervention by the child welfare agency into the parent-child relationship must be addressed. Before a child is temporarily removed from parental custody, the child welfare agency must make reasonable efforts to prevent the removal, unless unsafe to do so, which is subject to challenge and judicial scrutiny. Then, the juvenile court must decide whether or not the child is currently in need of protection, which is based on the parent's current fitness to care for their child. Again, the juvenile dependency proceeding will not go forward unless and until that determination is made.
Ms. Morgan, I appreciate the outline of the merits of the argument, but I wonder if you could spend just a minute or two on the question of whether we should entertain this particular petition. Both of these petitions that are being argued today are in unusual circumstances, and whether or not this matter is moot or whether there is an exception is an important part of this discussion, especially, I think, on this case.
Yes, thank you for the question. While it is true that the petitioner has been relieved of providing reunification services in the underlying case in an alternative manner, the capable of repetition yet evading review exception to the mootness doctrine is applicable to the issue before this court. First, the duration of the issue that is being challenged is relatively short. Because family dynamics are so fluid, the facts and circumstances of any case are unlikely to allow enough time for this legal issue to be addressed. And this case is really illustrative because this legal issue first arose 2 years ago in September of 2020. The district court didn't resolve the motion until July of 2021. And subsequent to that, NRS 432B.590 requires the juvenile court to hold a permanency hearing within 12 months. So the district court entered its order that we are challenging today in early July of 2021 and held that permanency hearing in August, just the following month in 2021. At that permanency hearing, the juvenile court decided that the permanency plan of termination of parental rights would be adopted and therefore relieved the agency of its obligation to provide the reunification services. So 1 month certainly wasn't enough time for us to have the legal issue addressed in this court.
Well, separately, the ultimate determination in this case of termination of parental rights didn't appear to involve this placement of this permanency statute. So I'm concerned about that issue as well. It appears as though the ultimate decision in the case made by the judge was not dependent on this statute.
The juvenile court's analysis is primarily based on why it believes NRS 128.105 is unconstitutional, but that wasn't the statute challenged in the lower court. The statute that was challenged again is NRS 432B.3933C, and that statute was enacted in response to the federal government's Adoption and Safe Families Act, which was enacted in 1997. And so this is really a matter of widespread importance for our entire state.
Well, I understand that part, but the order entered in this case did not depend on the unconstitutionality determination of 432B.3933C. It was decided separately on separate grounds, wasn't it? That's what it appeared to me. And the 432B statute appears to be a placement statute, not a termination of parental rights. I understand their interrelationship between the statutes, but ultimately the order entered in this case appears to have been one that was not reliant on the district court's determination, the commissioner first, and then the district court's acceptance of the unconstitutionality assertion of this statute. Isn't that the case?
The district court, the juvenile court relieving the child welfare agency of providing reunification services occurred because of NRS 432B.590, because the juvenile court held that permanency hearing according to that statute within the statutory limits. Mm-hmm. However, the constitutionality of NRS 432B.3933C impacts the juvenile dependency cases in general, although the child welfare agency was subsequently relieved of providing the reunification services at that permanency hearing. However, the juvenile court's order finding 3933C unconstitutional then created an inconsistent application of what the Nevada legislature intended, that this statute be able to be used by child welfare agencies and in the normal course.
Question's not articulate on the mootness question, but it doesn't appear as though the court relied on its determination, its initial order about unconstitutionality, in ultimately deciding the termination of parental rights. That's my information, anyway. Am I wrong about that?
Have the parental rights been terminated yet?
So this is a separate issue from the termination of parental rights, because this is a juvenile dependency statute, and termination of parental rights requires subsequent steps, initiation of a new proceeding. But no, the parental rights were not terminated. It is my understanding that resolution of the termination action was made by alternative means.
But the court later did did find no reasonable efforts were required, but based on a different ground than the statute that this petition addresses.
That is correct. The juvenile court relieved the child welfare agency of providing reunification services at that 12-month permanency hearing because it determined, based on all the evidence before it, that termination of parental rights was the permanency plan that's in the minor child's best interest. And in doing so, that permanency plan is inconsistent with providing reunification services, and that's why the child welfare agency was relieved of providing those services, but not because of 3C.
In terms of, I guess, to the point about whether this, in fact, is capable of repetition yet evading review, I guess, how often, Do you have any numbers about how often this particular issue under this statute arises that would warrant us taking it up in this case?
No, I do not have specific numbers, but I do think it is telling that first the federal government, enacting the Adoptions and Safe Families Act, identified this as a reoccurring issue in enacting this exception, and then the Nevada legislature adopting that. So I do believe that that indicates that this does come up, and it does happen. I don't have a specific number. I apologize.
Are you aware of any other cases in Clark County, for example, where this determination has been requested and made?
That the child welfare agency be relieved of providing reunification services? Yes, it's my understanding that the rest of the state is able to rely on this statute, except now Washoe County, because we may be precluded from doing so because of the juvenile court's order.
But you're not aware of a case in Clark County where a court down there has assumed that this is, or determined that this statute's unconstitutional?
I am aware of no other courts besides the juvenile court in Washoe County.
And I know we're kind of getting into what you were hoping to have for your rebuttal, but I want to ask a question on the merits, though, before we have you sit, and that is, how do you reconcile, let me ask you this. What's your position, then, as to under 432B.3933C, and as to whether the court needs to do any individualized analysis under subsection 7 of that same statute?
Yes, I think that subsection 7 can be read in harmony with subsection 3 because it codifies the child welfare agency's obligation to seek an order relieving them of providing the reunification services. The child welfare agency can't just say, I believe this family had a prior termination, so we're no longer providing reunification services. They have to present that competent evidence to the court and ask the court to relieve them of providing reunification services. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Eve, I did have a quick question, if I might.
Oh, go ahead.
Counsel, I believe it was Mr. Arascada's office on behalf of Real Party and Interest, Portia, that raised the issue of severability in their pleadings. I do not think any of the other answers addressed it, and you didn't address it in your reply, which I took it to be a concession that if this court finds the statute unconstitutional, that you would agree that 3C could just be severed from the existing statute in terms of how we tailor an opinion or decision?
Thank you for the question. In a footnote in my reply brief, I did address briefly the severability issue. And just since the statute is constitutional, I don't believe it needs to be severed. And if it is severed, it will then have the probability of making the state of Nevada out of compliance with the Adoption and Safe Families Act.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Jennifer Rains with the Washoe County Public Defender's Office on behalf of the Real Parties in Interest. I would like to make sure to reserve 2 minutes for Jennifer Jeans from on behalf of the child to have some of the time to respond. This is a highly unusual situation where you have both parents as Real Parties in Interest as well as the child asking this court to affirm the decisions made by two judicial officers in the lower court. That's not happened to the best of my knowledge. It's unusual that we would all be aligned, including with the finding of the court. We agree that this writ is moot because there is no relief this court could grant. The matter has already been decided, and to go to an earlier question, both parents executed voluntary consents to the adoption for their child. So the matter and the termination case has been resolved. But nonetheless, if the court chooses to reach the merits, then we would ask the court to affirm the lower court's decision based on two critical due process points. First, that it's not narrowly tailored to meet the compelling state interest. Second, that it does not provide the necessary procedural protections to prevent an erroneous deprivation. Lastly, under 3937, it does contemplate that the court should have discretion. The problem with reconciling that with 393C3 is that the only evidence the agency would need to present is a piece of paper, obviously certified from a court document, but there's no other information available, unlike the other factors where the agency might be relieved of reasonable efforts, serious crimes, prior history, other factors. Those would require the individual determination, not there's just nothing else to consider under C3 other than the prior termination.
Well, does subsection 7 give the court the ability to consider the specific facts regarding the prior termination and whether those facts would still apply today in the current proceeding?
It should, in our opinion, that there should be a consideration of those prior determination. That was not how the lower court viewed it. That was not how the state argued it.
How do you view it?
It could be a stretch, and given the court's discretion, and there's some authority for discretion looking at our statutes, then the court could consider the other factors underlying that prior termination. That would be important to making this be a fair determination, although there seems to be some ambiguity as to what the language actually says, whether that would be a reasonable interpretation more broadly.
Right. If when it says that there needs to be a case-by-case analysis, including under this specific subsection 3, you know, what does that mean?
It leaves open what can be considered. So far, the interpretation has been it only considers that there was, in fact, a prior termination rather than the merits or procedure or any number of things, circumstances, time, all of those factors regarding that order. And other states have modified their statutes or have enacted statutes to allow those more individual determinations, making it clear that there needs to be some sort of a nexus between the prior termination and the current standing of the parents in that case.
How would our ruling then interface with compliance with ASFA and the funds that come along
so,
with that?
So, you know, importantly, under it's 678 in 42 USC specifically says that nothing in this title should be construed to prevent the courts from having discretion to make determinations on case-by-case basis, including cases where no reasonable efforts has been provided. So ASFA clearly contemplates that there should be discretion, and can be discretion, and really ASFA obviously applies nationwide, and other states have not taken it to be mandatory, have seen that they can have discretion in terms of their individual statutes. So this would not cause Nevada to run afoul of the federal funding requirements.
How do you address the question of whether 432B, 393, 3C implicates a fundamental liberty interest, which would be a predicate to any unconstitutional determination? Seems like there are several cases in which statutes governing reasonable efforts are routinely upheld. I don't know, what is the fundamental liberty interest as to this statute?
The fundamental liberty interest, as a starting point, is the care and custody and control of one's child. Obviously, there are reasons that the state can infringe on that liberty, as laid out in statutes court cases. So that is the primary question. And then the other fundamental issue is that because of the mandatory, as argued today, language of 3C, it forever brands a parent as unfit to parent. It's an irrebuttable presumption when it comes to later proceedings with regarding other children. So that's
hasn't those positions, though, been rejected in California, for example, in Baby Boy H, 1998?
California has...
Even in our cases, I think.
So the difference between some of those state statutes, for example, California has a statute that considers the factors of a prior termination and has gone so far as to say that a termination that's granted when the parent is a minor or him or herself a ward of the court may not be considered. So the statutes in many of those other jurisdictions have tailored the when there can be a use or relieving of the no reasonable efforts based on a prior termination have given more discretion. But the reasonable effort, so there was, the state did cite a case regarding, the name escapes me at the moment, but it had to do with the ability to sue under 1983. And the court found that no, ASFA does not grant a private suit, but parents are entitled to the care, custody, and control of their children, and therefore that is the fundamental right. And that needs to be handled with.
I think that case declared there was a fundamental right.
No, I'm sorry, it did not. I attempted to distinguish it. Yeah. It said that there did not create a private right of action, yeah, so that the plaintiffs could not sue and say that that had that there was not an entitlement to that effort under 1983, and that predated the ASFA legislative changes.
Well, I may be confused here. That's why I'm seeking some clarification. Since this statute did not result in the ultimate determination the judge made, I'm having trouble making a connection as to why it would be declared unconstitutional if, by its face, can generally be upheld and doesn't as not implicating a fundamental right.
So we
understand my question.
I do understand your question.
And I apologize.
So, and there are two issues there. One is clearly the court can and does on a daily basis reach the same decision that the agency does not need to provide reasonable efforts based on other statutory provisions in the regular course of these cases. Right. So the court is able to, and did in this matter, reach that conclusion under other provisions.
Right.
The challenge that we brought to the agency seeking to be relieved from providing reasonable efforts at the juncture that motion was filed was very early in the case and based solely on this particular statute that would have fast-tracked to the termination based on the interplay of 128 and 432B.
That's why I was wondering if this case isn't moot for this reason.
We think it is moot, Your Honor. We do.
But the decision that the court made here that is challenged in this writ, even if we said it wasn't moot and we looked at the merits of the court's decision here, the court's decision wasn't a termination of parental rights. The court's decision was under this section of 432B finding that reasonable efforts weren't required. Why is that a fundamental right?
Because of the interplay with that finding, when you look later in either 432B, which allows termination by motion, or in 128, there's a specific cross-reference to 393 regarding findings that have been made. So the issue is once...
Cross-reference relates to conduct, not just the termination itself.
A finding with under that provision.
Yeah, and there was no analysis of conduct here.
Correct. And I think we would have reached a different result or a different analysis if it had been under one of the other provisions of 393 and the court had gone through that individual case-by-case analysis that as provided in subsection 7, mm-hmm, then we wouldn't have the same issue. Because there was no analysis beyond the mere existence of a prior termination, that's the problem.
But factually, do you have anything in this case, I mean, it's problematic because it's coming up, and you agree it's moot.
Correct.
I understand that point. But in talking to Justice Hardesty, you had an exchange about the California statute and the particular additional criteria that are incorporated in the California statute possibly being significant to the constitutional analysis. But it makes me uneasy in this setting to venture with no reference to underlying facts. Are there any facts here that would fit within the exceptions to the California statute that you allude to as saving its constitutionality?
As this case has been pled, there are no exceptions. There was a prior termination. Shortly thereafter, there was a petition filed to adjudicate the minor child in this case. And then shortly thereafter, there was a motion under 393C3 seeking for the agency to be relieved of no reasonable
effort. For example, the parents whose rights were, if this had progressed, they were going to be terminated. That parent was not a juvenile when the siblings' rights were
Correct.
Terminated, for example.
There is some evidence in the record that there was not a decision on the merits in that prior termination case regarding these parents, that the decision was made by default, that the father was detained in ICE custody, and a default was also taken as to the mother. So there is evidence that there was no hearing on the merits of the termination, no facts that would justify their current unfitness. That's very different than a case from Minnesota where that court did uphold its statute, which is somewhat similar to Nevada's. However, that case, they spent paragraphs analyzing the prior finding, which had been by jury trial. So in terms of Nevada didn't have that same level of due process protection in arriving at that termination order. In this case, it was by default. In other cases where they have upheld those statutes, there might be a right to a jury trial or other procedural protections that we don't have here.
But there is a clear and convincing evidence requirement. I'm sorry, Justice Herman.
Oh, no, it's okay. Go ahead.
But there is, even if it went by default, there is nonetheless statutorily a clear and convincing evidence requirement on the antecedent determination.
That is correct. There is still that.
Counsel, one thing I wanted to inquire about, in addition to the prior termination apparently not being on the merits, didn't I understand that there had been prior to that some involvement with the agency in which Ms. Sedano Castillo engaged in reunification efforts successfully?
Both parents at the time that this was pending had been engaging with the agency and participating in reunification efforts. I couldn't say those were ultimately successful given that they have both signed consents to adopt.
No, I'm sorry. Maybe I wasn't articulate. My understanding from Judge Dollinger's order was she disclosed on the record a potential conflict that everybody ultimately waived, and that was that she represented Sedano Castillo back in 2010 when the agency had involvement, and she successfully completed all the reunification requirements at that time.
I'm not sure that that was the outcome of that case. She definitely represented the mother, but I would be cautious in saying that those were successful. She certainly participated with the agency. I don't remember whether she did not ultimately reunify with that child. It was a different permanency plan. I want to say a guardianship, but I'm not entirely positive. And if I could
If she put in her order that there was successful reunification, we could trust Judge Dollinger that that's what had occurred, I would hope.
Absolutely, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. And then to Justice Kadish's earlier point when Ms. Morgan was speaking, do you have any sense of the numbers of times this issue is being raised in front of the district court, not just in front of Judge Dollinger?
So I can only offer my personal experience. I've been practicing for approximately 15 years, and this is the first time that this issue has come up in one of my cases.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Well, you know, I'm going to allow additional time that you had attempted to reserve, so I'll give your co-counsel 2 minutes.
Counsel for the child.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Child's counsel.
Mm-hmm. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Jennifer Jeans from Northern Nevada Legal Aid, formerly known as Washoe Legal Services, appearing on behalf of the minor child, real party in interest. I just wanted a few brief moments to really highlight for your honors that had this statute in question, NRS 432B3933C, been applied as argued by the Washoe County Human Services Agency, it would have had the effect of infringing upon my client's right to reunify with her family of origin if safe and appropriate. And that's because it would have been based on circumstances that were wholly unrelated to her specifically, and that happened, in fact, before she was actually born. And I think that really gets to the heart of why this statute is unconstitutional, is it prohibited the court in this circumstance from being able to consider whether my client's parents were safe and appropriate under the current circumstances before it, as it applied to my client, from considering whether anything could have been done at the current time to make the home safe and appropriate for my client, while at the same time mandating that an order be issued suspending reunification services and establishing parental fault as a matter of law.
That's yes. An interesting argument, but do you have any basis for maintaining your client's fundamental constitutional rights for an unborn child in this circumstance? I mean, you're arguing your client would have had a constitutional claim or a right to assert a claim, but what's the fundamental interest here of the unborn child?
My client was alive at the time, Your Honor. She was alive, and this was related to her.
Was she represented?
She was represented by myself, Your Honor, and it was for that reason that I did join with the parents to protect her rights.
So what's the fundamental interest that she has?
She has the same
statute.
Her rights lie in our Constitution, Your Honor. They're also reflected in our state statutes. In NRS 432.
But what's the right that's deprived
right
if this
is,
statute is followed?
It is her right to reunify with her family of origin and to be with her family of origin if it is safe and appropriate.
Do you have a case that says that?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. There's a number of federal court cases, and I apologize, I didn't take this approach in my briefing.
I missed that.
But, for example, Kenny A., X. Rel. Wynn v. Purdue, 218 FRD 277, that's from the Northern District of Georgia.
This is a new site you're offering.
I'm sorry?
This is a new site you're offering.
That is correct, Your Honor. It is just
supplemental authorities have been filed. You've not filed any supplemental authorities.
No, Your Honor. What has been filed and is before the court on the record is under our own statutes and what is referred to as a Children's Bill of Rights by those of us in the practice. And that's NRS 432.530, which does give children in foster care the right.
Can I have that cite one more time?
Yes, of course. NRS 432.530, which gives a child in foster care the right to remain in their home of origin if it is safe and appropriate.
Ms. Jeans, may I inquire just briefly, why was Luna removed from the home? Was it for a reason outside of the prior termination of rights? Why was the child in this instance removed from the home?
Yes, Your Honor, Justice, the child was removed for cause in this circumstance. I would not want to misspeak, but I do recall that there were concerns regarding domestic violence and substance abuse. I will say, however, that our statutes do allow protective custody to be taken of a minor child based upon prior neglect of a
But
of
in
the
this
child.
Instance, there was a. It was just unclear. We kind of came in this in progress.
Yes.
And so where we started was reunification. I'm just curious. Was there a reason outside of the prior? And you've answered that for me.
There
so
was.
There was finding a cause. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
NRS 432B.393(3)C does not infringe on a parent's fundamental right to the care, custody, and control of their child. As I previously was mentioning in my argument, that the temporary intervention into that parent-child relationship has already been addressed outside of a finding pursuant to 3C. 3C only does two things. It relieves the Child Welfare Agency of providing reunification services and mandates that a permanency hearing be set within 30 days. And at that permanency hearing, the juvenile court can hear evidence from any party and retains discretion to adopt the permanency plan that is in the child's best interest. That includes reunification, guardianship, or termination of parental rights. 3C does not require the juvenile court to adopt a permanency plan of termination of parental rights. It does not automatically terminate parental rights, and it does not require the Child Welfare Agency to automatically file a petition to terminate parental rights. And I would just like...
Can it obstruct the reunification of the child? It seems like the 14 and 21-month period could expire just based on the agency being relieved of the requirement. You follow my question?
The 14 of 21 months and the termination of parental rights statutory scheme?
Yeah.
That would be...
It seems if you... Operating these statutes that way, if the agency's relieved of that obligation, that seems to cut against the parent's ability to satisfy the requirements for reunification.
Any impact would be speculative because, I apologize, may I finish
yes.
the question? Any impact is speculative because even if the Child Welfare Agency is relieved of providing those reunification services, parental rights remain intact up until that order is, final order terminating the parental rights is entered.
Yeah.
But this 14 of 21 months, that statute you're referring to, does not come into play unless a termination proceeding is initiated. So the parents can continue to obtain and access community services and work towards reunification with their children, and they do. And so any impact that relieving the Child Welfare Agency of providing those reunification services
I guess the quick answer to my question is it didn't happen in this case, so.
It did not, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you for all of the reasons. I respectfully request that this court consider our petition on the merit and uphold the constitutionality of our statute. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, counsel, for the arguments and the briefing on this. The matter will stand submitted.